The Traveler and His Concubine.
Behold, here is my daughter, a virgin, and his concubine. I will bring them out now, and humble ye them, and do with them what seemeth good unto you. Judges 19:24.
In the days when no king ruled Israel, and every man did what was right in his own eyes, a man from the tribe of Levi found himself at odds with the young woman from Bethlehem, who was his concubine. Who knows how such ugliness starts between a man and a woman? They exchanged bitter words, but the Levite went too far when he shouted "harlot" in her face. Not an unusual story, of course, but who could have predicted how badly it would turn out in the end? Perhaps if there had been a king in Israel, the whole sordid affair might have ended when it was just an ugly incident and not yet a bloody civil war. The woman slammed the door of the Levite's house in the hill country of Ephraim and headed back to her father's house in the land of Judah. At first, the Levite was sure that she would see her own foolishness and turn back. He waited patiently for the sound of her footfall at the gate. Then, as days turned into a week, he began to fret. What fate had befallen her on the lawless roads between here and Bethlehem? At last, word reached him that she was back in the household of her father. And when the weeks turned into months, 4 months to be exact, he realized that she was not coming back, at least not on her own. What stung the Levite's pride most of all was the fact that his concubine apparently did not miss him as much as he missed her. After a few more sleepless and fretful nights alone in his bed, the man worked up enough righteous indignation of his own to send him out the door and down the road after her. He took along 2 asses, one for him to ride, and the other to fetch her back home, and a manservant just in case of trouble on the road. Even though 1 donkey was riderless on the way down to Bethlehem, the servant walked along behind him. But then, he was accustomed to walking. To the Levite's relief, no danger befell them as they made their way down from the hill country. As the Levite traveler and his servant approached Bethlehem, the man wondered about the reception he would receive when he appeared at his father-in-law's door. He knew full well what a sharp tongue was hidden inside the lovely mouth of his concubine. What if she had poisoned her father's mind against him with her version of what had gone wrong between husband and wife? What if she told her father that he had accused her of playing the harlot against him? What if her father, outraged and indignant, set upon him and drove him off with blows? But the Levite need not have fretted. His father-in-law seemed very glad indeed to see him, and even gladder when he saw the 2nd ass that was intended to carry his daughter back to the place where she belonged, now that she was all grown up and married off. The man lingered at his father-in-law's house for 3 full days, and he was treated to rich meals, an abundance of good wine, and much music and dancing. But the young woman refused to show herself. Instead, she sulked in a back room of her father's house, and the Levite found himself growing angry again. Why had he bothered to come in the first place, he asked himself. Let the wretched woman stay with her father. And so he announced that he would return to his own home in the morning, whether or not she wanted to come along, and he ordered his servant to prepare the donkeys for the journey. The next day he rose at dawn, but the woman was still nowhere to be seen. "Have a morsel of bread with me before you go," the father urged him. "You cannot travel such a long distance on an empty stomach." So the Levite traveler delayed his departure, and sat down at the table for what turned out to be yet another sumptuous meal that lasted until the sun was high overhead. His father-in-law poured cup after cup of wine and insisted on 1 last dance by the slave girl with the fetching smile who had entertained them over the last 3 days. "Too late to start on your journey now," the father-in-law said. "Why not spend the night and enjoy yourself? Then you can get off to a fresh start tomorrow." So he lingered 1 more night, and rose early on the 5th day, but again the woman did not show herself. Again his father-in-law pleaded with him to dine before hitting the road, and again he tarried. Then, quite to his surprise, and his father-in-law's obvious relief, the woman appeared in the doorway of the house, dressed in a long cloak and bearing a bundle on her head, all ready for the journey back home. His father-in-law abruptly ceased his entreaties, and instead seized the bundle from his daughter's head, making himself useful by lashing the baggage to one of the donkeys. "On your way, then, the two of you," prattled the father-in-law, not bothering to offer his son-in-law another night of hospitality, "and Godspeed." The sky was already gray when they left Bethlehem, and the clouds only grew more threatening as they made their way along the road. By the time they reached the outskirts of Jerusalem, the weather was wild and stormy, and the servant looked longingly at the little clusters of houses on the hills around them. Of course, the place was not yet called Jerusalem. The Israelites had not managed to drive out the Jebusites from their impregnable hilltop settlement, and the place still belonged to them. But the servant's misery was greater than his fear of strangers, and he pulled at his master's sleeve. "Master," pleaded the servant, "let us spend the night here among the Jebusites." "No, not here," said the Levite. "Not in a town full of strangers." "But the storm," the servant began to protest. "We will go to a place where we are sure to find a friendly welcome and a warm bed. Gabeah is not far off. Or perhaps Ramah," the Levite insisted, naming places along the road where he knew he would find himself among fellow Israelites. "I could not sleep knowing I was alone among strangers who might slaughter us in our beds." Looking back on that terrible night, the Levite often wished that he had consented to stay among the strangers in Jerusalem. As it turned out, the Jebusites could not have been less welcoming than the Israelites in whose town they bedded down. The concubine would certainly have felt the same way if she were asked her opinion, and if she were able to offer one. The sun was just setting as the party of travelers, the Levite and his concubine, their servant, and the two donkeys, reached the town of Gabeah in the land that belonged to the tribe of Benjamin. They trudged through the streets, chilled and hungry and soaking wet, but no one opened a door to them. At last, they set themselves down in the town square and waited for some good-hearted soul to offer them food and lodging. But not a single Benjaminite offered to take them into his house for the night. At last, the empty streets of Gabeah echoed with the footfalls of an old man crossing the town square on his way back from a long day in the fields outside town. The old man's birthplace was in the hill country of Ephraim, and he now lived among the Benjaminites in Gabeah. He walked with his head down to keep the rain out of his face, and when he glanced up, he saw the travelers in the middle of the square. "Where are you going?" he asked in a friendly way, "and where do you come from?" "We are coming from Bethlehem in Judah, and we are heading toward my home in the hill country of Ephraim," the Levite explained. "We stopped here to find shelter from the storm, but no one has offered us a place to stay." Then, lest the old man think him a beggar and a vagrant, the traveler continued, "I have straw and fodder for the asses, food and wine for myself and the girl and the young man," he said. "We have all we need, sir, except a roof over our heads." "I am a man of Ephraim, too," the old man said with real warmth. "You are welcome under my roof, and I will give you food and drink. But you must not spend the night in the street, I beg you." So the Levite traveler and his party followed the old man as he led them to his home. As hospitality requires, the old man put out straw in the courtyard for the asses, set out bowls of water so his guests could wash their feet, and ordered his daughter to lay out food and drink for a late supper. The concubine ate sparingly and in silence, then followed the old man's daughter to a back room and promptly went to sleep on a pile of bedding in the corner. The servant slept on a pile of straw in the storeroom at the back of the house. But the traveler and the old man stayed up late into the night, laughing and drinking, sharing stories of the good country where the tribe of Ephraim dwelled, and bemoaning their misfortune at ending up among the Benjaminites. "At least for you and your woman," said the old man from the land of Ephraim, seeking to comfort the Levite after his ungracious reception in the streets of Gibeah, "It is only for one night." The two of them were still trading stories and sipping wine when they heard a sudden noise in the alley outside the old man's house. A shout, a scuffle of feet, a thud. The Levite traveler looked at his host in alarm, but the old man only laughed and reached for the wine jar. They then heard the sound of urgent whispering right outside the door, and even the old man seemed suddenly alert.
"Hey, in there!" someone shouted from outside the front door, pounding on the wooden door with their fists. "Open up!"
"What do you want?" the old man called out, his quavering voice betraying his fear.
"It's late! Go home and leave us alone!"
Then suddenly the noise seemed to come from all directions at once, as if a gang of men had surrounded the little house and were trying to force their way in through every window. A few moments later, the pounding and shouting stopped as suddenly as it had started. And now a voice was heard again at the front door.
"Bring out the man who's inside there with you," a hoarse voice shouted on the other side of the door. "Bring him out!"
"Yes, bring him out,"
a second man said with unmistakable menace,
"so that we may get to know him."
And his words incited harsh laughter from the crowd. The traveler looked at his host. "What do they mean?" he asked, although he already feared the worst. The old man only confirmed his fears.
"Around here," the old man said,
"the sons of hell among these foul Benjaminites like to know a man the way a man knows a woman."
"What will we do?" the traveler asked, looking in vain around the room for a place to hide. The old man did not answer. He sat for a few moments in silence, then struggled to his feet and staggered toward the front door, still a bit tipsy but sobering up fast. He leaned up to the front door and shouted loudly so the men outside would be able to hear him plainly enough.
"No, my brothers," the old man said, his words slightly slurred on his tongue. "Do not do such a wicked thing." "Bring him out," came the shout from outside. "You can see he's my guest," the old man continued in a pleading tone. "Do not treat a guest in such a wanton way."
The crowd answered with a fresh flurry of shouting and pounding, and the old man feared that they would simply break down the door and have their way with him and his guest. He glanced toward the curtained opening in the room where his daughter and the traveler's concubine had gone to sleep. Surely they were awake now, he thought to himself. Who could sleep through all this commotion? And then quite a different thought forced its way into his wine-soaked brain.
"Hey," he shouted to the men outside, "I have a daughter, a virgin."
The Levite turned and stared at the old man.
"And my guest is traveling with a very pretty young woman," the old man continued. "They're both here right now."
The noise outside suddenly stopped. The traveler, too, listened in amazement.
"I will bring them out to you now," the old man continued. "Do whatever you want with them, whatever strikes your fancy, but leave the two of us alone."
At first, the traveler bristled at the old man's words. What right did he have to offer up the concubine to the mob? The old man's own daughter, well, that was one thing, but the concubine belonged to him, the Levite thought to himself, and no one had asked him whether she might be thrown to the mob like a piece of raw meat to a pack of dogs. But he said nothing, waiting to see whether the old man's offer would satisfy the men outside. But it only seemed to incite the crowd outside the door to an even louder chorus of catcalls and whistles.
"It's no good," the old man said miserably. "It's not a woman these sons of hell want."
The Levite, however, was not ready to give up on the idea, which had begun to seem quite compelling as he contemplated what the mob intended to do to him. After all, he told himself, the concubine was such an annoyance, such a burden, and she had caused him so much grief over the past few months. Why should he put himself at risk of the mob's vile appetites in order to spare her? So the Levite rose from the corner where he had been huddling in fear, stalked into the room where the concubine too was cowering, and manhandled her to the door. When the old man saw what the traveler intended to do, he lifted the stout length of wood that barred the threshold and opened the door just wide enough for the traveler to shove his concubine into the street. The young woman hissed and scratched as she tried to brace herself in the doorway. But now a half a dozen of the men outside seized her by the hair, by the wrist, and by the ankle. Pushed from behind and pulled forward at the same time, the young woman tumbled into the street to the jeers of the crowd. Then the old man and the traveler shouldered the door closed again, dropped the bolt of wood in place, and fell to the floor in exhaustion. Outside, the crowd fell suddenly and ominously silent, at least for one long moment, and then new and even more terrible sounds began to reach the ears of the old man and his honored guest as they sat with their backs against the door. That is where they stayed all night long, the old man and the traveler, each one mute, each one avoiding the other's eyes, each one listening to the terrible sounds from the street, the sounds that a gang of men make when they take turns raping a woman over and over again, doing exactly what they please to her, until the sun began to come up. At first light, the Levite looked over and saw the old man was asleep, or at least pretending to be asleep. He then heard a soft thud, as if someone had let a sack of flour fall against the door. A moment later, he heard the sound of voices fading into the distance as the men hastened away from the old man's house. The traveler waited a long time to be sure that they were finally gone, then cautiously opened the door of the house. The young woman was sprawled in front of the house. Her two arms were outstretched, her hands reaching toward the door, but she was still and silent. She seemed almost at rest, as if she were merely asleep, and the mad thought occurred to him that it had all been a bad dream. Yes, of course, a dream. Somehow, despite everything he had heard during the long night, the Levite traveler succeeded in convincing himself that it was so. Up, the man said aloud, addressing the woman as he crossed the threshold, stepping over her body, and heading toward the courtyard where the two asses were tied up. Up, he said briskly. Let us be going. No one heard, and no one answered. The donkey she had ridden from her father's house carried the mutilated corpse of the concubine back to the hill country of Ephraim. By the time the traveler and his servant reached home with their gruesome baggage, the Levite had worked himself up into a pious frenzy at the way the Benjaminite sons of hell back in Gibeah had abused her beautiful young body, and he had devised a plan to punish them for what they had done. The servant laid out her battered and bloody corpse, the face unrecognizable, the private parts unspeakably insulted, on the table in the Levite's house. As the servant watched in amazement, the Levite himself took a sharp knife that he used for butchering and cut the young woman's body into 12 pieces, limb by limb. He wrapped each piece of the corpse tightly in linen and cord, and then he dispatched the 12 grisly packages by messenger to all of Israel. All the tribes, except Benjamin, of course, against whom he now hoped to incite a war of revenge, a war that would cleanse all of Israel, a holy war. Such a thing hath not been seen from the day the children of Israel came up out of the land of Egypt unto this very day, went the Levite's message. Consider it and speak.
The Book of Judges is a grab bag of tall tales about the time of troubles that followed the conquest of Canaan, a place where the Israelites were beset by bitter enemies, riven by tribal hatred, and lured into apostasy by strange gods and goddesses. The tale of Samson and his catastrophic seduction by Delilah is perhaps the single most familiar story in Judges, one that has escaped the confines of the Sunday school classroom and spread into the popular culture. And Samson is emblematic of the plight of the nation of Israel, whose people were equally susceptible to seduction and brought down calamity on their own heads. But the tale of Samson and Delilah is hardly the most lurid of the atrocity tales that we find in the Book of Judges, an escalating cycle of sin and scandal that reaches a bloody climax of mass rape and mass murder in the account of the Levite traveler and his concubine. Indeed, the biblical author is eager to show us by gruesome example how badly ordinary people behave when they enjoy too much liberty, and the essential message of Judges is repeated throughout the book like a mantra. In those days there was no king in Israel, the author writes. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. The moral chaos that prevailed in ancient Israel before the crowning of a king, as depicted in Judges, begins with sexual violence, escalates into civil war, and ends with genocide. Throughout the book of Judges, the victims of these excesses are often wholly innocent women. We have now encountered two of them. Jephthah's daughter, a doomed young woman who achieves a certain tragic grandeur and death, and the Levite's concubine, a woman of whom we know nothing at all except that she is gang-raped to death, then dismembered and scattered among the tribes of Israel. Significantly, the biblical author takes care to specify the tribe of the men who abuse her, and even the town where she dies, Gibeah. But her name is never mentioned, so her story has come to be called the Gibeah Outrage in a kind of reverential shorthand. Oh, miserable men who destroy your own species through those pleasures intended to reproduce it, cried Rousseau in his own horror-soaked retelling of the tale. How is it that this dying beauty doesn't freeze your fierce lusts? But by the end of the book of Judges, we are so sullied and unsettled that we are ready for a king, any king, who will bring these wild and dangerous people under control. And that, of course, is the motive of the biblical author who told these shocking and sorrowful stories in the first place. The Israelites have acted abominably, we are given to understand. They have strayed from the strict faith of their patriarchs. They have been preyed upon by their pagan neighbors. And, at the end, they have fallen upon each other with a degree of barbarism that exceeds the worst excesses of their enemies. Only a king will be able to save them from their enemies and themselves. But, as the book of Judges seems to predict, the first man to sit on the throne of Israel will fail. And so the scene is set for the greatest king in the history of Israel and the real hero of the Bible.